Hello friends, welcome to Wings Neighborhood. This is your host, Varsha Vaishampayan. Our guest today is Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin. Stephanie is our first guest from academia. And being a university professor of chemistry myself, I'm naturally gravitated towards teaching and academia. So I'm excited and looking forward to this discussion today with Stephanie. Stephanie is the 24th president of Augustana University, the first woman to lead the university in its 160 years of history. As a result of her leadership, the university is implementing its transformational Viking Bold, the Journey to 2030 Strategic Planning, largest and most comprehensive campaign in its history. Called to public services, she was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 2004, where she went on to serve four terms. She was the first woman elected to the U.S. House from South Dakota and the youngest woman serving in Congress during that time. Stephanie says what grounds her is her upbringing and influence of her mom and grandmom, a very common story we hear from a lot of influential leaders. She talks about mentorship is about give and take relationship. She says there's a power and privilege in the roles and responsibility of a mentor that they have and how to enlist that to expand opportunities for their mentees. She agreed with me that mentoring is a skill and it needs to be learned. Highlight for me is Stephanie's thoughts and ideas about opportunities for local businesses and universities to partner together to innovate to achieve business growth, especially post-pandemic. We had a very insightful discussion about how to manage a change. I will not spoil your listening experience by telling you what she shared with me. Find out for yourself. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let me present to you Stephanie Herseth-Sandlin. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us for this amazing discussion. I'm really looking forward to it. Welcome to Wings Neighborhood. I specifically am very thrilled about this conversation, Stephanie, because we really never had anyone from academia coming to Wings Neighborhood and talk about leadership. So this is going to be one of the kind. So thank you for that. And also somebody like you who started your career in as a lawyer, and then you were in public domain, public service as a congresswoman, and now you are 24th president of Augustana University. What an amazing combination. I just want to kick this off by asking you, what makes Stephanie who she is today? Take us through your journey and talk to us about your leadership style.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you and your listeners. It's an honor for me to engage in this conversation with you today, to share some of my journey and the things that I've learned from other women along the way. I would say really what grounds me is the upbringing that I had on my family's farm in a very rural community, in a very rural state of South Dakota, and the influences of the women in my life, my mother, as well as two grandmothers who were very different, and how that has shaped me over the course of my own education, the risks perhaps that I've been willing to take with their support and encouragement in doing some different things over the course of my career, and the benefits that I know that I've had based on the trails that they helped blaze so that I didn't encounter perhaps earlier in my life, some of the barriers they may have encountered, but how it's helped me refine my antenna for the types of barriers that still exist, whether it's for women of my generation or the younger women that I am now surrounded with here at in a university setting.
You know, we've talked to so many of our guests, and I always feel that your childhood, your upbringing, your parents or somebody in your family always have such an influence in who you are. So I think that feels like a very consistent theme. Stephanie, also, as you know, that we just announced a partnership with Wings for Growth with Augustana University. So thank you and your leadership, Dr. Lori Dalley and everyone. We just made it happen very quickly. What that tells me, and it's a great testament that you and your leadership believe in mentorship, right? We absolutely have to provide that mentorship for our women, men or women. Wings for Growth obviously is for women, but of course, men too. Talk to me a little bit about what are your thoughts about mentorship? Have you been mentored by anyone? And how do you see this working going forward at the university and also in the businesses?
Yes, I have been mentored by different people, men and women. And I think that's an important part of our discussion today and such an important part of the work that you're doing through the Wings for Growth program and what that means in the corporate setting. But really organizationally, whether you're in the public sector, private sector, a for-profit, nonprofit, I think that finding mentors, finding those who can use their positions of responsibility and influence, whether there is power and privilege in those roles and responsibilities that they have, and how to enlist that to expand opportunities for the mentee. But the mentee so often becomes the mentor. It's, I think, a give and take relationship. And I say that in part because I am in a university setting in which we have so many intergenerational relationships, where we have faculty, coaches, administrators, staff that know that we're learning from each new group of students that come to us, just as we are sharing knowledge and helping refine skills and impart wisdom as they graduate and leave to be servant leaders in their communities and workplaces. And I think it's about deepening relationships so that there's trust, that there can be candid questions that get asked and attempted to be answered, and sometimes are answered together. The mentor doesn't always have the answer. But I think it's also something where it's facilitating introductions, it's opening doors, it's being that sounding board to have you as the mentee go even deeper in your own critical thinking and your own self-awareness based on the trust and respect you have of a mentor who's asking you some of those tougher questions, who is exploring with you and alongside you what some of the opportunities may be. And I think that's sort of the richness of those relationships when mentorship can go both ways. And when I think about the role that younger people in our lives may have, I often share the story when people say, well, how did you end up being president of a university? I say, well, the first intern that I hired at Raven Industries, where I was general counsel and vice president of corporate development, unbeknownst to me, nominated me to be the president of the university because he had recalled some conversations we had had over lunch while he was working with me and in the legal function there at the company. And so it's just sort of never be surprised how sort of the relationships in your life may create these moments of discernment in a later life stage that you may not have anticipated. And that's what I love about that piece of my story, but also I think the piece of many people's stories, whether in their personal lives or professional lives, if we're open to be vulnerable, maybe as the older person in that relationship with the younger person, of really sharing more parts of our own story and journey that illuminate things for them, may also keep us connected and create these other thoughts and possibilities.
I love that story. And mentoring is a two-way learning, right? Both mentor and mentee, both are learning, especially at the university or schools or colleges. I mean, mentors also have to be great teachers, right? Because this is an important skill. And I say this all the time, which I don't know if everyone will agree, but I think that mentors are more like a career parents, right?
Yes.
They're invested in their mentee's growth. As a parent, you can't always say, hey, I don't know how to do it, so go find it on your own, right? Don't do that. Yes. We don't do that to our children, right? So in a mentor-mentee setup as a career parent, you don't say to your mentee that, I don't know, I can't help you. You go find the resources and you find the help. because you're invested in your mentee's growth. So
that's so true, Barsha. And as you say that, I think of my own mom, right? My parent who was one of those who instilled confidence in me to run for public office that first time. But the other woman that was instrumental was a mentor of mine who got to know me when I was in high school and then throughout college. And she had been serving as the state chair of the Democratic Party here in South Dakota. And I also reached out to her at different times throughout my career, even as recently as a couple of months ago, when I had the potential of perhaps another opportunity to serve state and country again. And those two women, whether it was when I was 30 years old or 50 years old, I love that analogy of a career parent, but also the person I'm referring to, Judy, she was a lifelong educator. And to your point, when someone asks you to be your mentor, or when someone says, will you be a mentor to this person? Sometimes people are reluctant to say yes, because there is a set of skills that should come along with it, and training for others who know how to be most effective, to be that guide, to be that trusted source of exploration alongside you that can share wisdom, but also, as you just described, encourage one to seek resources to help, again, inform decision-making and the quality of decision-making and career choices.
Absolutely right. Mentoring is a skill. And people often think, oh, I'm paying it forward because I'm a mentor. Yes, which is true, but mentoring is a responsibility and it's a skill that needs to be learned. Just because somebody has a CEO or vice president or president title, I always say that doesn't automatically mean that they are great mentors.
Right.
Mentoring is a skill.
True.
All right. So moving on to the next question, Stephanie. As you know that we're all slowly recovering from pandemic and we're all keeping our fingers crossed and because the worst hopefully is over. And one of the things that businesses have to face and already are facing that they have to innovate, right? Nobody was prepared for this. So there is a lot of innovation that needs to happen to readjust and start all over again. And I always believe that academia plays a big role in helping business innovate and recover swiftly from the setback. And it is my hope, and I hope you would agree, that businesses, small, medium, at minimum, but also the large businesses will partner with local schools and local universities and leverage each other's resources. What a great opportunity for your graduate or MBA students or even undergraduate student to participate in an innovation that is required, needed, much needed for the business. What are your thoughts? And is this something you are thinking of doing where you are right now?
Yes, Barsha, we have been, we are, and we're looking at even more opportunities. And that's what I would encourage everyone to think about. And you mentioned it, the local talent and resources that can be leveraged based on relationships of leaders in business and in universities, colleges and universities, can really create extraordinary exponential opportunity for both institutions with the targeted regional needs and the community impact in mind. And while you can have very large multinational corporations and the federal level of government or institutions of national global reputation, that doesn't mean that all of the opportunity goes there. So often, there's a potential you overlook the opportunity and the relationships right next to you, right? And so I think that it's the deliberate and intentional nature of building those relationships across sectors, because the businesses rely on the universities to attract, prepare, and retain talent, intellectual capital, but the universities benefit from understanding what are the emerging trends and creating that sense of urgency so that we know how things are evolving and how quickly they're evolving so that we can share information that can be mutually beneficial. And having been in the private sector in a manufacturing and technology company, we were deliberate about working with our universities throughout the footprint of this region, knowing that each of them had different strengths that they could bring to us from a workforce development and talent pipeline perspective. And that, yes, we had things to offer in terms of mentorship, in terms of resources, in terms of more targeted course design right? Leveraging the expertise of faculty who've been trained and professionally developed and equipped to uniquely help students in these settings of critical thinking, of collaboration, communication, in the fast-changing technological developments that are happening in so many sectors, whether it's technology specifically, whether it's healthcare, financial services, and the like.
And so true, right? Especially in technology. I mean, the students, younger generation, they're so much into it. And yeah, often, I mean, this is only a win-win model where businesses don't have resources to innovate, and they can rely on these students who are studying. They're very excited to be part of this project. And obviously, you know, when time comes to hire them, businesses have amazing resources who are starting young in the company, right, and bring so much enthusiasm. So I really hope that innovation brings a lot of universities and academia into the business force, because it's, I believe it will be win-win model for both. All right. So moving on, as I could tell, Stephanie, and you've shared this with me before, you have some amazing plans for Augustana University. I just read some things about Viking Bold and multi-year plans. So I am, first of all, I'm very happy to hear that. I'm sure your students and your faculty, staff and board members, everyone is looking forward to it. But as you think about innovation or big plans or strategic plans, change has to be part of that, right? And as I'm sure you know, that managing change is the most difficult thing when you're thinking about big strategic plans. Mm-hmm. So especially for academia, I'm very curious to learn that what kind of challenges you face when you think strategic picture, strategic vision, strategic planning. It, does being siloed become a problem? How are you getting the collaboration, bringing everyone together so everyone is aligned to the same vision? Talk to us a little bit about the challenges and what works smoothly.
My pleasure. And the provost here at Augustana and I were just talking about change management. And when you as a leader are accustomed to and like change or find it energizing, you have to recognize that a lot of people that you work with, regardless of the type of organization, do not like change. And rather than being judgmental about that, I think you just need to recognize that your leadership abilities need to manifest themselves in ways then where people feel more comfortable coming alongside you. And I think a key piece of that, Varsha, is that we as leaders spend quality time being really good listeners to more deeply understand the historical context of our organizations, and spending quality time building relationships to understand the role people have had in an organization, especially if you're a new leader into that organization, because you will reap the rewards of the trust of those relationships if you spend time building that context and those relationships, because it will help you identify opportunities. And when you identify the opportunities, you then can articulate a compelling narrative around those opportunities, grounded in the respect and understanding you have for the context and foundation of your organization. So as you then become an advocate for the change you believe is not only necessary because of trends in your sector, because of the pace of the change and creating that sense of urgency, you're working to persuade other people about that potential and why they're necessary to unleash the potential that won't crack the foundation, but rather strengthen it, reinforce it, and build upon it in ways that allow you to be more competitive. And I think it's then about how you not only articulate that narrative, but at the same time, you're demonstrating your own expertise as a leader, you're implementing plans with excellence, while you empowered others to be a part of the planning and implementation so that people see their influence on the plan. They understand their role in helping to implement that plan. It really helps, I think, to elevate the quality of decision making and inspire action that can lead to the types of success and momentum that continues to build and help people believe even more deeply.
You know, so true, because everyone has to see an opportunity in it for themselves, right?
Yeah.
Then they become the change agent, right?
That's right.
Then it's not all about dictating from the top what to do, It really is coming from, this is for me. I have to do this.
And you ask, yes, you can ask. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You can ask what they need, right? Because as leaders, we need to know that we can't just keep asking people to keep doing more and more, right? With the same tools. It's about professional development. And we know how important professional development and investing in professional development is if we're supervisors, right, of our coworkers, as leaders in our organizations. So because they then have the buy-in, but they also have the trust that you will listen to what they need to help realize the change that we're looking for together.
So true. Very well said. I just learned something. It's so important. And doing it at this level, you really have to bring everyone along. And that's the hard part. The hardest part is that. But I know, I'm very confident that you're going to do this and we're going to watch you and learn from what you do and how you do it.
May I add something there? Because I do think we should all aspire as leaders to try to bring everyone along. But I'm going to reach back to my former public life in Congress and bring it to what I think organizationally for all of us, we need to keep in mind as leaders. We represent all of our constituents in the organization, just as I represented all South Dakotans when I was in Congress. But whether it's in the policymaking context or back in these political campaigns, you're always going to have a group of people that you represent and lead. They're unpersuadable voters for whatever reason, right? And that doesn't mean you dismiss their viewpoints and perspectives. There will always be value. You represent them too, but you can't let 80 to 90% of your energies be consumed by trying to persuade the 10 to 20% of the people, perhaps in your organization, that just may not be inclined to want to put their shoulder to the work, right? So without dismissing their perspectives and viewpoints, allowing it to add the value it should in the planning, and doing what you can to equip them and empower them to help implement on the implementation. A lot of it is identifying those people that are going to come alongside, that feel re-energized, that understand and see the bigger picture, that you know if they're given another opportunity, stretch opportunity in their current role. And so I sometimes, you know, caution people, you know, that every now and then you're just not going to be able to get everyone to come along. The best sometimes you can hope for is that they are in the boat with you, but not rowing in the opposite direction, right?
So true. Absolutely. Right? I was going to say that, that maybe, you know, I always remembered my father always said that. You're so right. And thank you for pointing that out, that you don't have to win everyone over, right? But what you do have to do is listen to everyone, because you don't know what you don't know until you listen to them. Right? So there's something to learn. No, this is super interesting and very good. Thank you for sharing that.
You're listening to the Showing Up as a Leader podcast hosted by Wings for Growth. If you're ready to take the leap and build your wings on your way up, sign up for our leadership development program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.
All right. So Stephanie, we always have some fun on our podcast. And we like to ask rapid fire questions, even though they're called rapid fire. I don't think there's anything rapid about it. So you can take your time. But I congratulate you for being so brave that you wanted to be surprised about these questions. You didn't want to know ahead of time. So let's see how you do it. Are you ready, Stephanie?
I think so. I'm ready.
All right. Let's go. Describe yourself in 3 words. That probably was the hardest one.
I think I'm diplomatic. I tend to overthink. So I'll also describe myself as analytical, nicer term for someone who overthinks things. And empathetic. I think I have, based on the mentors and some of my life experiences, I feel I can readily do my best based on my own, like putting myself in someone else's shoes. And I think that's a really important part of leadership today. So diplomatic, analytical, and empathetic.
Sounds good. And just listening to those responses, I think there is a 4th one. I like to add, you sound like someone who is very true to herself. So very authentic.
Thank you, Barsha. That means a lot to me. I try to be vulnerable and transparent in my leadership as well.
Totally as being authentic. All right. So the next one, it's fun, I think. If you could talk to the President of the United States today, what would you talk to him about?
Oh, goodness. Well, I have had the honor of serving with President Joe Biden when I was in Congress and actually spending some time with him here in South Dakota about 9 years ago or so now. I would first talk to him as a university president. I would talk some business, and I would want to talk to him about the importance of increasing the Pell Grants, right, for students to access higher education, right? So I would want to talk to him because he has some interesting ideas of investing in higher education, but as a president of a private university and the importance of serving more students who are Pell eligible, the increasing that maximum level would be really helpful to so many students that we serve and that so many other colleges and universities serve. And then I would also probably want to spend a little bit of time with him talking about a person that we both admired so greatly and was a role model for us in public life, a native South Dakotan, and that's George McGovern, who ran for president in 1972. And that is where I spent time with President Biden when he came to South Dakota for the memorial service, where we both spoke after Senator McGovern passed away.
You know, all we have to do is get this video and podcast go so viral that you will be getting a call from White House saying, hey, Stephanie, I know you want to talk to me.
That would be great. Bend his ear a little bit.
Absolutely. All right. So the next one is, again, I think fun. If you could win any award, what would it be? And why?
Well, this would be very aspirational, and it wouldn't be an award I could ever receive in my current, well, I shouldn't say that, because we have so many students who aspire to do such great things if I could play a role and be a part of at least being there when they won the award. But the award I would draw attention to, Varsha, is the World Food Prize. And it's given in the state capital in Des Moines, Iowa, and given my farm upbringing, my rural roots, as well as some of the public policy that I worked on in Congress, but also some of the products that we developed when I was working at Raven Industries for precision agriculture globally. And it's all about reducing food insecurity. It's about reducing poverty by empowering and feeding more of the world and doing it in ways that are innovative and sustainable. And whether it's innovation in science, whether it's innovation and courage in public policy, whether it's the coalition building that happens, the World Food Prize is an extraordinary international honor and award. And having had the privilege of attending one of those ceremonies and the impact, the breadth and depth of the impact globally, that would be a wonderful award to receive.
But I never knew such a thing existed.
Yes. If your listeners just Google World Food Prize, sort of see all of the programming that happens around it, the history, the past recipients who are so inspiring.
I mean, you have so many different things in you as a leader. Oh my God, look at you. I think I can see you getting that prize very soon. Your retirement plan after a few years of doing university.
Maybe. Find the right partners to do it with.
Exactly. All right. Moving on. I think now that the easier ones, your favorite book.
My favorite book that I actually just shared with a colleague here at Augustana is a piece of historical fiction. I love historical fiction. And it's called Cutting for Stone. It was a book that a book club that I'm a part of had recommended a number of years ago. And the author is Abraham, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing Verghese, and it's set in Ethiopia, but it spans the time frame that brings one of the characters to America, and it's in the medical field. I just love it. It's a compelling book, Cutting for Stone. And I would read it again when I get it back from the colleague who borrowed it from me. So that was my favorite. Just a wonderful story.
Oh, I have to look it up. I didn't know. So this is why I love asking this question to everyone. So now that I am creating my own list of books I should be reading. All right. So the next one is your favorite leader.
You know, my favorite leader currently, I also had a chance to meet briefly when I was serving in Congress and traveling with a congressional delegation led by current Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. I served on her select committee on global warming and energy independence. And we took and we visited a number of different countries and had the opportunity to spend time with Chancellor Angela Merkel in Germany. And I really admire her. I mean, if you think about her life story and growing up in East Berlin, and then as a woman leader and how long serving she's been and her role, not just in Germany and in the European Union, but globally, really admire her strength, her fortitude, her strong and compassionate leadership.
You are the second person who named her as their favorite leader. So I agree with you. I have a lot of respect and I follow her everywhere. I see how she's managing. There's something to be said, right? That when the country is managed by a woman, you can see the difference. I'm not saying good or bad. I don't want to get into that fight. But you see a lot of empathy, and especially the time of these kind of times where we're going, the whole entire world is going through pandemic. Empathetic leadership is required. We need that.
Exactly. I agree.
All right. So last one. You did really, really great. Your favorite leadership quote.
It's one that I have used here at Augustana that I shared when I was inaugurated here. And the history of it is attributed to John Quincy Adams. It's about inspiring action. And if I can remember it here, it's about inspiring action of others. So if your actions inspire others to dream more, to learn more, to do more, and become more, you are a leader.
Awesome. I love that. That's a great one. I think we're going to highlight that. All right. Great. Thank you. You did really well.
Thank you. Thanks for that.
So do we have a few more minutes. If you don't mind, we can do a few more questions.
Sounds good.
I want to talk about a little bit about next generation leaders. And Stephanie, as being the president of the university, you're preparing next generation leaders. What advice do you have for them? And what advice do you have for Generation X and baby boomers, who they're going to go and work with, and all the multi-generations have to come together and work in harmony? What advice would you give to each of these generations being a leader?
That's a great question. And both in my university setting and some of my past professional experiences, but my own household, you know, I'm married to a baby boomer, I'm a Gen Xer, and I'm raising a Gen Z. And my stepchildren are millennials. So we've got all the bases covered. And I would have to say, you know, let's all just be very careful, number one, to avoid making assumptions. And number two, to be very intentional about being curious about people of other generations and how they may have been socialized. Okay. So I think that being inquisitive of each other, you know, if you're one of the older leaders in an organization and you're hiring younger talent, particularly the role, as we mentioned earlier, Varsha, the role of technology in how they've been socialized, and whether that's how they've been socialized by gender role and expectations, by their political socialization, their expectations about workplace culture, and same for the younger people going into new workplaces. Be inquisitive, be intellectually curious about the organization and those leaders and how they were socialized differently than you because of conflicts of the past that you may not know as much about, whether that's Vietnam, right? For so many baby boomers, whether how women who are older, Gen Xers, baby boomers were socialized by the civil rights movement and the feminist movement. But yet, what we see as older leaders, right, as Gen Xers and baby boomers, is sometimes thinking that the expectations of younger talent in our organizations is unrealistic. It's too idealistic. They need to adapt to our culture versus allowing your organization to adapt and change based on what they bring into your workplace. I think that if we can overcome those types of misconceptions and assumptions that are all grounded in relationships, right? And being curious about one another and asking good questions before making those assumptions, then those organizations, whether they're corporate settings or their university settings overcome what some might think are clear divides, if you can do that by unleashing that potential and as a leader encouraging those types of relationships and times well spent, you're really going to, I think, maximize your competitive advantage and lead your organization to heal from what we've dealt with in this pandemic and all that 2020 inflicted, but also restore and grow in a healthier way culturally. And we know how important workplace culture is to older workers and leaders and younger workers and leaders.
I think you said this before too, and you said it now, that don't assume, right? Everybody was in a different circumstance. Don't just say, oh, this generation did not do this right. But right. What were the circumstances and why things were done differently?
Asking why. I was just pointing, because you're right. Ask why. And this can help then reveal certain governance structures or processes that everyone then has a chance to bring their thoughts and questions and ideas to influencing change in governance structure and process that really are, as a lawyer, you know, it's your governance structure, your policy, your process that help keep your organization, it gives your organization predictability, right? And can help empower and construct the framework for your organization that can serve the organization well and that you have processes to allow it to change in an organized, cohesive, understandable way to everyone. Not that it's too rigid, right? You don't want the structure and the process to be too rigid, but you do want then to have the clear opportunities for people to influence it and ask questions of why do we do something this way? And we may continue to do it that way, but if the people around you can't answer that question well then, ripe time for evaluating some alternatives and some changes to your structure and process.
That is the kind of leadership that will bring all the generations together, right? As you said, ask the questions why. Don't make it so rigid. Empower people to bring their ideas and be able to ask that important why question. Why are we doing it this way? Thank you. Very cool. And the next question I have, Stephanie, as you know that this will be a time where a lot of companies, corporations, organizations, they're already focused on diversity and inclusion. So I say this to all our mentees and all our women in at Wings for Growth, that this is a great opportunity. Everybody's looking to hire women, right? So we can't complain, oh, the opportunities weren't there. Now the opportunities are there. Are we ready? That's where the Wings for Growth comes into picture, especially for women of color, right? So we do our part, you know, for middle management. That's what Wings for Growth focuses. I love to hear something from you that before even they come to the companies and become middle managers, universities can play a big role in preparing them, women of color, for workforces. Is this something you would consider making it part of a curriculum for women of color so you prepare them more around leadership skills and more about soft skills, as they call it, although I do not like that word, soft skill. They are core skills. Yeah. How would you do that? What are your recommendations for universities?
Well, I think universities are all differently situated in where they are in their overall diversity, equity, and inclusion programming. We're very fortunate here at Augustana to have great partners with the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce, this whole area and region. And our director of our Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, who happens to be a woman of color from a different part of the country, she came to South Dakota from South Carolina. She's been invited to be a part of this Pathways program to help other organizations in the Sioux Falls business community understand sort of what we're doing at a university for that type of programming and training and what they can do and how we can be a partner in that. I would say, though, to your question, Barsha, I would be very open as we have more students and women of color as students and faculty and staff, that there be a subset of an opportunity for helping prepare women of color for the workplace. And I say this as a white woman who had certain privileges and benefits, but also came across certain barriers. And how we share with each other what worked for us and what the data tells us and what best practices are in enlisting white men in positions of power and privilege to help us and to expand opportunity in ways where they don't get defensive or put up walls, right? Because many are leaning into this. Many white men, white women are leaning into this moment, wanting to deepen their understanding. And I think that, but especially in, well, so many organizations, the data reveals it, right? In corporate America, same with a lot of universities. These are often historically and predominantly white institutions. And depending on the community that you're in, again, this is the opportunity for these place-based opportunities that you understand local context and opportunity, that we do make sure that we're finding the affinity groups, right? There are just going to be things that I don't know and am not as aware of. My antenna aren't the same as a white woman for what women of color experience in certain workplaces and what's worked for them and the advice that they would give. And we need, as leaders who may not be people of color, our leadership can help, though, create the space, the place, the time, the relationships we can help leverage to bring the affinity groups together for that type of more specialized programming and preparation, right? And that I can see as something that people would appreciate, right? And that the learning can still then happen for those of us that are not people of color to keep deepening our context and awareness so that there can be an opportunity for white men and women to be a part of it at some point, again, more for lessons learned and an expanding opportunity. But leading with data is, I think, always a good place to start because it helps inform decisions and actions, and it's hard to argue with it, right? If it's been surveyed in an appropriate way and some questions that can come in around it so that people have realistic views and understandings. But then to your point, for women of color to understand the value that they bring to the table, right? And the type of preparation that's so important to help others see the value of the perspective right out of the gate. I always say to women, regardless of their racial or ethnic background, you know, it's almost like women have an extra hurdle at the beginning of the 100-meter hurdles, okay? And so if you're good out of the starting blocks and you can clear that first hurdle, you then have momentum. You've just overcome a set of expectations that may have been low, that may have been undefined, but you now have momentum. And we need to make sure that we're then giving women and women of color the best tools of being fast out of the starting blocks and how to clear that first hurdle, because then there's that momentum and even more opportunity for them to get into leadership positions faster and then for them to keep opening more doors, right? So that would be the metaphor I would use here too. How do we create a set of programming building on what we've already done that understands the unique hurdle that's right there at the beginning of the race that men don't have?
And once the ice is broken, it's all the doors open right away, right? Because it's almost like that block is stopping you somewhere in your mindset. It's saying, oh, no, you can't do it, that imposter syndrome. But once that's open, suddenly everything starts to. And I'll tell you that by the time these women come to our program or they're hired at a workplace, I almost wish that at the school they were teaching them how to be confident, how to embrace your own values. And if you have an accent or if you look differently, make that as part of your core values. Make that as your strength, right? If you don't need to be teaching that at the workplace, they should come prepared from the universities. And now that is me saying put more burden on the universities. But these are more impressionable age and they learn because they are there to learn.
This is a great example of the question though you asked me earlier, Varsha, of that type of partnership and leveraging resources and talent that can go, yes, to academic course design, right? But also the type of program design in student success and engagement and achievement, right? In terms of readiness. And so I think those same affinity groups that exist in corporate workplaces with the universities can come together to help inform what we need for preparation and outcomes with exactly the example that you just gave. We're missing an opportunity. So let's not think about the business and university partnership only being at sort of this academic course design and offering, but the fuller student experience and preparation.
This is Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month, API Month. And I've been talking to a lot of people about this, that it's just a matter of making sure that you believe in yourself. You are true to yourself, because rest is you can learn, right? This is something you can learn too, but you got to first believe that you can learn. And that's a starting point. So I'm totally looking forward to continuing our partnership with Augustana. And hopefully we can bring even more such courses that are more appropriate for women of color. And we can continue to enhance our partnership there.
I look forward to them. So grateful for the partnership and for this time that we've had talking about women and leadership and generating some ideas from the conversation that we can then act on going forward and enlist the support of other women who may be listening to the podcast and participating in the great programs that you offer.
That's awesome. So that's almost to the last question. That's our signature question we ask all our guests. And the question is this, that 2021 will be an interesting year because of everything that we have been through. What is your advice to women who are ready to take the leap and build their wings on the way up?
My advice is courage, take the risk. Even if you don't achieve the goal on the first try that you're setting yourself, you will learn so much about yourself and develop relationships along the way that will help you succeed. When I think, and you've heard this, I'm sure, from other women, I've learned the most about myself and how to be a better leader when I have come up short, whether it was in a political campaign, right, or a big project we were trying to work to close in the corporate setting. And I think that if you believe in yourself, as you were just talking about, muster the courage. And sometimes the best way for women to muster up the courage is to engage their peers and women in their lives, where I started our conversation, my mom and my grandmothers, but also my women friends who've known me the longest, right? They can help bolster that courage so that you are ready to take the risk. And in my mind, what do you have to lose? The world has shifted dramatically on us. Now is the time to take those risks, to have that courage, to unleash your creativity and see where it takes you. Because even if it doesn't take you from point A to point B, the fact that you had that ambition, you took the risk, will illuminate another ramp for you in a path that you may not have envisioned, but that will be the best one that you could have gone down.
I love it. I love it. Courage it is. One of our guests also said on the podcast, she said, you don't have to see it to be it, right? Women always, you know, that we don't have a role model. We don't have enough role model. But you know what? Be your own role model.
Yes, that's beautiful. I love that as well. And, you know, to the point of Wings for Growth and why I love what you've done, even with that sense of lift, right? And to his point, you don't have to see everything out on the horizon, right? You just have to believe in yourself. Know that if you start down that journey, more things will reveal themselves.
On that note, thank you so much, Stephanie, for making the time. I know you're a busy woman. A lot of people are waiting on you, but we appreciate this. And we hope we can come back for another round someday.
Wonderful. I look forward to it. Thank you again for the opportunity, Varsha. Thank you for your leadership. We'll look forward to being in more discussions with you and those with whom you work soon.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in. We wish you the best as you take the learnings from this podcast and strive to show up as a leader in all those moments, situations, and interactions where you can make a difference. Build your wings and sign up to be part of the Wings program at www.wingsforgrowth.org.